AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hello and welcome to a short and special edition of the Undercut Podcast. We're back to review not a Formula One Grand Prix, well, we sort of will have some Formula One action, but instead we actually have the Silverstone Festival to review because, of course, Ellie May is joining me this evening.
Hello.
And the two of us spent 3 days trackside at Silverstone enjoying the classic racing action of the 2024 Silverstone Festival. And we'll kick off with, I think, the overarching thing of the weekend, which was very much the weather, which was certainly not very Augusty.
I guess if you disregard the wind on the Friday, that was probably the most summery of them all. I think the mixture of the wind and the sun are managing to always hit my face. I did come out of that day a little bit sort of burnt. And then, yeah, Saturday was just
torrential.
Yeah, I mean, they tried to get Formula Junior out. Is that the first?
Yeah, they tried to get the Formula Juniors out and the Formula 3 and the Formula 2s out. But again, they just sort of ended up giving up and just going, screw it, touring cars. These are about the only things we can actually send out into the wet. I know Fred Shepard sort of gave up even trying it in the 700 horsepower Camaros. So they sort of pulled the plug pretty quickly. And it was a race pretty much dominated by the look of things by the Ford Sierra Cosworths on account of just simply having the traction to put down the power.
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing afterwards an interview with Rick Wood, who was in a Nissan Skyline. He ended up coming second, and he said, that's the worst race conditions I've ever had to race in. Like, it was just horrendous. There was so much sort of standing water, spray. You could hardly see the cars coming, let alone how they were then able to sort of drive in those conditions. But yeah, they ended up sort of having to unfortunately cancel sort of F2 and F3 because they were racing the Sunday as well, and just sort of switching up the timetable a bit on the Saturday just so that they could get some cars out that could sort of handle the rain a bit and sort of get some track action as well. Mm. It did mean that it made our jobs a little bit soggy when taking pictures trackside as well.
Especially because Saturday was your first time ever properly shooting trackside as well. You'd managed to sort of finagle your way into some insurance and get a trackside tabard. And then sort of first thing you sort of get to experience as a proper trackside photographer is absolute lashing rain of Silverstone in August as well. It wasn't like it was warm summer's day rain either. The entire weekend at points just sort of had the overarching cold, sort of penetrating cold of a November day. So hardly a pleasant experience, but getting close to the action, does it sort of a tick off the bucket list?
For sure. And I mean, I don't, even though it was wet, it didn't really sort of, it didn't really affect my mood, maybe because I was sort of getting out onto trackside for the first time. So the first place that I went was on the corner of turn one, which you're incredibly close to the cars there. So I think just the experience of that overarched sort of any sort of the weather conditions. I mean, I wasn't really realizing that I was getting soaked. I mean, we did put a bin bag over my camera and lens so that all the rain didn't sort of get through into that and so essentially ruin my camera. But no, apart from that, I mean, living in sort of Somerset naturally, you're used to really boggy, wet conditions. So actually when you go to tracks, they're considerably a lot less soggy because they're still quite firm underfoot. Mm. So I'm always like, oh, this is not so bad.
Yeah, I mean, inside of Abbey is an interesting place to sort of break your sort of your rookiness of being a sort of trackside photographer let alone one where it's absolutely hammering it down. You've got classic touring cars just hammering towards you out of the grey mist of spray.
To be fair, it did mean that they were kind of going that bit slower. So it, because then later on, I think on the Sunday, we went back there for to watch the Mustangs.
Pre-66 touring, yeah.
Yeah. And they were going at such speed, like so much quicker than sort of the day before, that I think if I had seen that, first of all, I think it maybe would have like, it would have petrified me a little bit at the sheer sort of speed that they're really coming at you. So in some ways, it was almost a nice introduction that they were that little bit slower. And I got a bit more used to them sort of being that close to me.
It was a great way of easing you in because, yeah, with the pre-66 touring cars, they have to properly hammer it in. And also you tip it into the corner and then everything comes through in sort of a four-wheel drift. And it's even more pronounced in the front-wheel drive Minis than it is in the Mustangs. The Minis pretty much come at you, sort of you follow them and they're just staring you down as they come through Abbey. And you're like, that is frankly terrifying. If you've never done trackside stuff before, never stood against a fence and watched a car come sort of within 10 meters of you at sort of north of at least 80. Certainly, I think the bigger Mustangs were doing about 100 as they sort of just chuck it in there and just hope for the best. Possibly not quite as much as 100. I think in F1 cars, you're doing about 140 into there. So maybe sort of just about 80 miles an hour, 80, 90. But even then, it is a phenomenal experience to sort of be that close or stood on the pit wall, just sort of hanging out a little bit with a camera. Waiting for just watching a car coming barreling towards you is such a strange scenario to be in.
Yeah, and it's, I always think because it's a corner, like you said, especially with the Minis, they're turning in at you and just looking at you as they're coming round. So it's a lot, I don't want to say scarier, but it gets sort of your adrenaline up a lot more than just watching them shoot past you from the side.
Mm. Yeah, it all of a sudden when you can make eye contact with the guy behind the wheel, all of a sudden sort of completely changes the aspect of quite how you sort of realize, oh, there is one arm co-rail and a bit of grass between me and him, and that is not a lot, all things considered. So yeah, but for a great way for a circuit to start shooting at trackside, I think Silverstone, sort of for its history, for what it is, a British racing circuit, is a great one to really kick off that pattern with. And fingers crossed we'll get you trackside at some more events in the future. We've got that opportunity and opening now, at least.
I really hope so. But it was a lot of fun.
It is a hell of a lot more fun when you could just sort of find yourself tramping up the edge of a gravel track behind the barriers, just sort of going, I think I'll just shoot from here, see what the angle is like, see what the lighting's like, and then just sort of watch cars come through at an angle that only TV cameras really get to experience. And also you're usually quite low to the ground, so you sort of see everything come past a hell of a lot quicker, and it's a hell of a lot noisier too as well.
Yes, I mean, you have invested in some earplugs.
Loop earphones. They're not a sponsor of the podcast, but I would recommend them.
I didn't. We had many a conversation that I couldn't hear a word. I would argue that you were talking whilst the cars were going past, and that's why I couldn't hear anything. You would probably argue that I was just a bit deaf.
Yeah, I would say a good investment would be a set of decent sort of reusable earplugs. A lot of trackside photographers, if they're doing a lot of work, often get like the personalized molded ones. But for me, I think it was not quite 70 quids worth of loop just to get the really good ones with a mute in the middle and a little string to keep them around my neck. Just meant that I didn't walk away from the weekend going, I have a penetrating headache. I can still hear a Cosworth DFV rattling around my brain, and then spend the next week just constantly picking huge amounts of earwax out of my ears. Because every time I've shot trackside with no ear protection, I always find my ears sort of almost try and protect themselves just by filling themselves with wax. And then the next week is a horrid time just spent going, so yeah.
That's a nice insight into your life.
Nice insight into my life. It's not a glamorous thing to be doing, but there we go. There's a murky underbelly to everything.
I don't think anything about photography really is glamorous.
No, it's a lot of beige food, a lot of walking, a lot of getting cold, wet, and muddy, and then a lot of time spent in a back office somewhere with no natural light.
Yeah, and then your joints going, You've put me through a lot this weekend. We're a little bit tired now. Yeah. And I always find I sort of start the weekend with quite a high-pitched, sort of chirpy voice, and by the end of it, I am an octave lower.
Just sort of full of boundless energy and optimism. By the end of it, after a lot of shouting, a lot of walking, and just simple exhaustion, sort of the end of it, you sound a bit like sort of Barry White, and your voice is down your boots. You're sort of left sort of wondering what on earth happened. But obviously, we'll explain a little bit of what Silverstone Festival is. It started out quite a few years ago as the Silverstone Classic. It was just sort of a celebration of classic motor racing with live music most evenings, huge amounts of car clubs showing up. I think it's usually over 100 classic car clubs showing up. So cars on display, track parades, everything sort of classic motoring related, and a brilliant celebration of sort of the fun of what classic cars can be and still do. It changed its name a few years ago to be the classic, the Silverstone Festival. So there's sort of additional bits showcasing sort of modern F1 stuff. There's food tents. There's still the live music. There's still the classic racing. There's just a little bit more to it and makes it a bit more of a sort of well-rounded event. So festival is a pretty apt name to sort of attach to it. Of course, we enjoyed a bit of live music on the Saturday night as well.
We did. We had Busted. I mean, last year we had McFly. This year we had Busted. And like both of them were my favourite childhood bands, so I'm kind of like, who can they have next year that's like my another childhood band? I think the only thing we're like missing is maybe like S Club 7.
Well, there's not many of them left. I was about to say something like sort of the Sugar Babes, maybe. Did they have, they were last year, weren't they? Yeah, they were one of the nights last year. So Atomic Kitten, are they still around?
I think it maybe depends on which ones.
Yeah, who from Atomic Kitten? Is Atomic Kitten, or is it, maybe it was Sugar Babes that has sort of like the, had the constantly changing lineup. It's the fact that it was the ship of Theseus.
Sort of both. I think Sugar Babes had more changes, but I definitely know Atomic Kitten also changed. But yeah, I mean, I loved Busted. And I think everyone around us as well did. It was a really sort of great crowd that we managed to be in. It was like everyone from sort of different walks of life as well. We're all sort of really getting into it. We even got you to get into it. You even got your torch on your phone and swayed.
I had a fun time.
Yeah. And then we realised that actually we've been doing photography for, at this point, 2 days. We're not sure our arms can take a whole song of swaying with a torch.
Yeah, I don't think sort of that was the wisest way to try and round out an evening. I think I'd argue that the only less wise way would have been my Friday evening when I decided to do the charity track run, did 5K or just over 5K around the circuit, which was good fun. I always love doing it. You get the little sort of track outline on Strava, and it's great fun to do it and an interesting way to see the circuit. And also you remember quite how steep Silverstone is at points. You think it's one of those sort of relatively flat, easy circuits, but it has some elevation changes. It's a long run up the straight of Hangar Straight out of Chapel. That is a surprising uphill. And then you forget it's actually very steep coming down out of Stowe. So yeah, it's an interesting sort of circuit to get a proper appreciation of its undulations. And if you ever get the chance to do a run around a racetrack, certainly one on the F1 calendar, it really sort of changes how you view it in real life and gives you a proper appreciation for the tightness of the turns and also the just how steep it is, because often the elevation doesn't come across on television. But we'll get back to some of the actual racing. We saw some fantastic classes of cars out and about. We'll go sort of for a fairly obvious question then. What was your favorite race?
For me, it has to be Masters Sports Car Legends. I mean, these include sort of your 60s, 70s sports cars, so your Lola T70s, McLaren M1Bs, Ferrari 512M, sort of your Chevron B16s, B8s, and so on. And for me, I've just knocked down my water with passion. It was all... those sports cars from those kind of eras, I just think they had no right to look that sexy with those like curves in all the right places, especially as Silverstone put them on when it was the last race on Saturday. So you had the sun beating down on them in golden hour, sort of accentuating sort of the curves. But the race itself, epic, and the ending sort of even more so. So you had David and Olivier Hart took the win in the Ferrari 512M quite comfortably, and it seemed like Alex Brundle was going to take second in Gary Pearson's Lola T70 Mark 31B. 31B? Mark 3B. 3B. And as sort of like a few laps later, he was fighting with James Claridge, who was in the Lola T 296, and Claridge lost quite a bit of ground on Alex as they were sort of overtaking back markers. But sort of on the last lap, Claridge was almost maybe four car widths behind Brundle down sort of Wellington Straight, and he started to slowly close in on Brundle sort of around.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Loughfield, Copse, Maggots, Becketts, and it had to be about two cars width before going into the final corner. And it looked like Brundle was going to get second. There was no way, surely, that Claridge was going to then dive in on the inside of him and the last corner around the Hamilton Straight, but he did. And as he descends up the inside, and as they sort of both pass this back marker of the McLaren M1B, so you end up with three cars crossing the line together with hardly any space between them. And Alex almost slid around the last corner, and I think I'm not sure whether he dipped a little bit in the gravel or whether it just sort of the back end slipped away from him a little bit. But then as he sort of came back, he did actually make contact with the other Lola, but it was such an incredible way to end a race. And even like the commentary, it was like, Brundle's gonna get sort of second place, or is he? Hang on. This is over.
It was a battle that really sort of bubbled to the top in the sort of final few laps. And it's the races for classic racing are pretty much always held under sort of endurance rules. So basically there is a time period set, and it's whoever can go the most distance or sort of most laps within that time. So when it gets down to sort of the final with Silverstone, say 6 minutes, or in other words, roughly three laps for these guys that are doing about a 2 minute lap, roughly. I think, yeah, best laps for the sports cars are 2 minutes and six. So sort of he gets the final 6 minutes and everyone goes, okay, we've got three laps remaining. It's do or die, it's now or never. And you sort of, you know, if your car is still running at that point, you can pretty much beat on it till the end. And I think at that point, Brundle knew what he had to do. And it was a battle, a proper battle to the end as well. And they don't hold back. And you can actually go and find the race. I did actually pull it up earlier because I know a friend of the podcast, Andy, was looking to sort of watch it back. You search for Silverstone Festival live stream Saturday. And it's the race starts at 8 hours and 50 minutes in, because it's just a full live stream. You can just rewind, go to 8 hours and 50 in, and that is the kickoff for the sports car. So it's all the stuff from the World Sports Car Championships. It's all the things that are raced at Le Mans through the sort of late '60s, '70s, and just sort of towards the late end of the '70s. Again, really beautiful cars, and cars that you often forget existed. The McLaren M1s, some of my favorite cars from that period. The Lolas are phenomenal, really nice looking cars, but for me there's something about those McLarens. They just look so perfect, and it's got one of my favorite liveries in it, that series, the Nicky Vinegar Runes as well. I absolutely love the sort of cream and blue livery on that car. So it's a solid choice of favorite race, and I understand we've seen that class in action so many times. It is always enjoyable. I think there'll be a version of it at this year's Goodwood Revival as well, with the Whitson Trophy, which is pretty much the same entry of cars, but with a few more Cobras and GT40s chucked in for good measure. So it should be tremendously exciting.
Yes. And I think for me as well, even though they don't dominate sort of the field in sort of being the quickest cars, but I just love watching Chevron B8s and B16s. I just think they're such good looking cars. But I also want to mention the Masters Racing Legends as well, which consists of Formula One cars from sort of the 70s, 80s. They have two 20-minute races. They had a soggy one on Saturday, but a dry one on the Sunday. But to determine Sunday's grid, they took the top 10 finishing positions from Saturday and essentially reversed them. So Matthew Wrigley, who came second on Saturday, started in ninth and actually then went on to win it on the Sunday in his Tyrrell, with just under a second gap between him and Stuart Hall, who had won the previous race with his March 81. And I just thought, such an impressive feat, really, to go from sort of ninth to sort of first. Because there is a few Tyrrell 011s, aren't there, on the grid?
There's a good sort of series of Tyrrells that do form the grid for that. I think there's sort of about three or four Tyrrell 11s and 12s that really make up that field and still race. And it's always pretty closely contested. Yeah, I've got one, two, three. There's an 011B in there at the moment. So for this weekend, four. There we go. So there's four Tyrrell 011s or 012s in respect. So it's one of the sort of more popular cars contested alongside things like the FW07s and 08s and the Arrows A4. So there's sort of familiar cars you see regularly. But yeah, it was a fantastic race, that one, and a great one for sort of if you love a bit of V8 powered F1 noise, really.
What was your favorite race?
Favorite race for me, though, I think it has to be the final race of the weekend. It would have been the International Trophy for Classic GT Cars. This is pre-66 GT and sports cars, and a really, really interesting field of cars, and one that's incredibly diverse in its power units. So it sounds phenomenal as well. You've got everything from four cylinders in the Lotus Elans, straight sixes in your Heelys and your E-types, right up to the socking great V8s of the Mustangs and the Cobras. And we were treated again, a bit like with Master Sports Cars, to a proper firecracker of a finish with two Cobra Daytona coupes absolutely duking it out at the front of the field. And you're sort of watching it going, those are two phenomenal cars in a straight line and a bit of an handful around the bends. And then just watching Olivia Hart and Julian Thomas just absolutely stonking it out. And then sort of there was still 10 seconds up the field from the next guy, someone who sort of happens to vaguely know, Harry Barton in a TVR Griffith, which is by all means quite a sort of recalcitrant car to drive, very short wheelbase, very big Ford V8 in the front of it. The TVR Griffith is a fantastic little car, but against the Daytona Cobras, just with the long straights of Silverstone, they were in a league of their own and absolutely disappeared into the distance. And it was a fairly stacked race when it came to talent as well. You've had Adrian Harrison Newey racing an E-type in that one. Brundle, as we've already mentioned, an E-type with Pearson. And Jan Magnussen as well. Kevin Magnussen's dad racing a Cobra Daytona. So phenomenal race. And I think we were stood at the sort of in bit of the loop, just as you enter sort of Farm Village in the loop. There's a brilliant sort of marshalling point there to stand at. And behind us, we had one of the TV screens showing the race. And bar the one marshal that actually needed to be paying attention to what was on the circuit, everyone else was sort of just stood watching the big screen, watching these two Cobras going around lap after lap after lap. It must have been a sort of 10-12 lap battle. They absolutely smacked it out for, and at that point the track is cooling down, the air temperature is dropping, so you can really start to push on and you don't have to worry about cooking your engine or cooking your tires. It's all dissipating really nicely into what was quite a cold evening for August. And yeah, they were absolutely tooth and nail, sort of who's got better corner exit, who's last on the brakes. And it was, yeah, really fine, really close racing. And it's that thing of, if you want to see close racing, everyone sort of bemoans Formula One for at times not being close. Just look at a few other racing options, and Classic is a great way to go if you want to find something that's exciting.
It was a brilliant race. I mean, usually, we don't usually get the Daytona Cobras, do we? When you sort of go to Brands Hatch, Donington for sort of, you don't usually get to sort of...
Tend to come out for the smaller sort of weekends, but for things like the Silverstone Festival, they'll break cover, they'll come out for the big events. So that's where you get Goodwoods, you get them at your big Silverstones. If it's a sort of significant sort of race, so if it's things like Pall Mall Trophy or Old Park Gold Cup, you'll often get the big, really sort of historic cars, the big flash ones come out. But otherwise, it's a field phenomenally packed with incredible Lotuses and TVRs. I know you and I have enjoyed watching those pugnacious little TVRs at Donington before as well, and they are brilliant, brilliant little race cars, and in the hands of some of these drivers, absolutely thrown about the place. Nigel Greensaw is another great driver for a TVR Griffith. But yeah, looking at the results, actually, you've got a Ginetta G4R, Dan Eagling's car, right up at the top of the field in fourth place, which, much like the Turner 850 in the RAC TT, had no reason to be up there. That Ginetta is incredibly underpowered compared to the two Daytona Cobras and the TVR ahead of it. It's a tiny, lightweight car with a small four-cylinder engine in it, but absolutely flung around, could really show off with the big boys.
Yeah, I mean, usually it's normally sort of the TVR Griffiths are sort of the dominant ones. Like you said, it's usually like Nigel Greensall and John Spears that are usually sort of leading the pack out. Yeah, it sort of, it even got to the sort of the point where we'd at this point put our cameras down and we would just watch the big screen, watching the Daytona Cobras just going around. And then as soon as they sort of went past the turn one, we'd then sort of from where we were, we could see them. And then we'd watch them sort of go around sort of farm. No.
Yeah, you come out of Abbey, you go through Farm Village farm, and then into yeah, the loop, and then we'd see them disappear through Aintree. And we sort of see them emerge out of Abbey, watch them pretty much side by side the entire way through that sort of little Mickey Mouse section into Village, who's latest on the brakes, who's able to get the drive out, and then sort of usually line astern coming out of the loop and through Aintree. You're sort of watching it going, that's bonkers. And just sort of two V8s pretty much in sync, just sort of thundering away. And you hear them disappearing off down the Wellington Straight, and then the next field of cars just comes rushing through. And yeah, absolutely phenomenal.
And it's sort of, as well, like you said, it got all the marshals going as well. And afterwards, as the race finished, like they all went onto sort of the side of the track and sort of were clapping. And it was sort of the most animated that I had seen sort of the marshals all weekend, really. So it was a phenomenal race.
Yeah, it's one of those things that when the marshals sort of love to support the racing, but and they love to be there and they do it to support the racing, but you know it's really good when it's properly captivated the marshals, who are otherwise sort of relatively just focused on the job of marshalling as opposed to truly captivated by the racing. They're there and being professional, but all of a sudden when it's really got its hooks into them, you're sort of like, oh, this is quick, and this is a big battle. And equally with the classic cars, they can either end with a big crash or a big retirement as one of the engines lets go. So it sort of goes one of many different ways. We saw some spins on track as well. We saw some incidents. I've got a brilliant photograph in the spray of that touring car race of a Skyline, an early Skyline, just going sort of round and round and round like a spinning top with two Sierra Cosworths just flying out the track, but after it we're sort of leaving it behind really, and it's just disappearing into the spray. And you're sort of going, ooh, that must have been a bit of a brown trouser moment, because you're in a light blue car in the middle of spray and all of a sudden you've gone missing. Like, oof.
And it was as well the wheel coming off of pre-war, what was it?
It was a Bentley Tourer, I think, a three, four and a half.
Yes.
That just sort of,
like I said, I really like Bentleys, pre-war Bentleys, and I have a phenomenal curse.
Your phenomenal habit of cursing seemed to sort of strike in the most spectacular of manners. Again, coming out of Abbey just on its way through Farm, it just sort of goes, I don't need my rear left wheel. So that just gets spat out into the gravel trap. And the guy, credit where it's due, keeps it relatively tight to the edge of the circuit, despite now going round like a spinning top, and sort of just ends up sort of stuck at the side of the circuit, just sort of going, I can't really get recovered very well from here. So I think they did have to red flag that one, unfortunately, to go and get the guy out. But yeah, no injuries, no sort of major sort of end over end accident for him, just sort of ran around like a top and job done. But yeah, it was, yeah, some good close racing and a few spins and near misses for people hither and thither.
But I think credit where it's due, we didn't have a lot of mishaps happen. You know, there wasn't many that got sort of stuck in the gravel or crashing into each other. It was all pretty clean, very well done. I mean, I don't think there were even some races, I think even sort of Masters F1 racing legends, I don't think we had anyone.
Any retirements from it. Sort of certainly on the circuit, there were perhaps sort of stuttery moments, but nothing that went truly awry with them, which was great to see, really. Yeah, it was just a really good weekend. A bit jostly at points between some classes of driver, but there was no sort of major shenanigans, which is what we wanted to see. So I'm going to save one of the questions for last. Instead, we'll jump to your favourite non-race or off-track moment. I think you might have already alluded to this one.
Yes, I think we have. I think, as you were saying earlier on, obviously Silverstone Festival doesn't just have on-track racing. It's got a huge array of car clubs, food and drink markets, which included this year sort of Diddley Squat Farm and Hawkston. But every night they have bands or artists on. And this Saturday, they had my favourite childhood band. So, and with Busted. And I've never seen them live before. I've got to see Muck Busted, but I've never actually had the chance to see Busted. So for me, that was sort of a cherry on the top of an amazing weekend. What about you?
For me, mine's a bit more sort of vibes based. For me, I always love going along to these events. I'm very privileged to get to go to them with work, but it's always great to sort of catch up with pit faces that I know, people that I know from sort of within the industry. It's sort of always quite a great way to chance to sort of sit down and sort of have a chat with friends and sort of colleagues from the industry as photographers and journalists, and equally sort of famous faces that have come to know you and sort of will tolerate your presence, I think is a fair enough way to put it. But yeah, so for me, it's always a great chance to just sort of be out and chatting and catching up with sort of friends and colleagues from within the world of photography and writing. So that for me is always what makes these events quite so much fun, as well as getting to see the incredible racing action. It's sort of going, oh, I haven't seen you since X event, sort of what are you up to these days? Oh, I saw you were out shooting with X. Just sort of it's a great way to sort of actually catch up face to face with people you otherwise only know through Instagram.
I agree. How wholesome of you.
I know. I thought I'd pick a rather wholesome one, as opposed to simply saying I really like the fact that I ran around the Silverstone circuit and touched the start finish line. But yeah, a little less braggadocious, a little more sort of wholesome and demure, to use a very popular phrase at the moment.
The people make it.
Yes, the people do indeed make it. And it's the marshals you get chatting with, it's the other photographers, it's the car clubs and the people that bring along their cars that also make the event. And I think that's one of the key parts that really sort of makes it all come together. I mean, what other event can you go to where you can act as a chock for, I think it was an Austin Healey when they were trying to unpack the field out of the pre-66 sports cars. Guy was trying to get his Cobra out of the sort of assembly area afterwards when everything had been checked over, and just sort of gave it a push up the slope and then just sort of stood there to act as a human chock. It's sort of like, this is a bit of a strange way to spend a Sunday evening, but ho-hum.
No, I definitely agree. I sort of, as I'm getting sort of more into these events and getting sort of more into media and getting my face sort of a bit more well known, it's definitely starting to be sort of welcomed into that community really nicely. And I'm very grateful for Rick, who I think you sort of knew previously, he then sort of showed me around sort of how to get in and out of sort of places, where are some good spots, and sort of let me basically follow him around for a day. And I'm sort of really grateful for that, because otherwise it's sometimes I find these events, especially Silverstone, because it's so big, a little bit daunting. And it's like, okay, I know I've got track access, I've got the tabard that lets me go track access, but it's a little bit scary to do it on your own.
Yeah. It's sort of also it is a huge circuit. It covers a huge amount of space. It's a case of where do I go and where can I go?
How do you get to those places as well? I've never had some of the access that I now have. And it's like, I kind of almost know sort of like, you know, I can go through the gates of maybe sort of the sort of around sort of farm and the loop and whatnot. I sort of know around there, but anywhere to sort of get on and go sort of into the pit lane, go to like Abbey or the final corner and whatnot. I think if I had to figure that out by myself, it's a little bit more daunting.
Challenge, yes. Yeah, yeah. I certainly had. I think Silverstone was sort of when I first shot it, I vaguely knew the circuit layout. So I sort of knew roughly good points to go and stand to get a photograph and then simply see if I could be on the other side of the fence. But whenever you shoot a circuit for the first time, it is kind of an overwhelming thing, and you sort of want a few days to do it beforehand. You want to be there for like the testing and the warm-up days so you can sort of figure it out. I think then we'll wrap up with one final question, and one that's a bit more sort of intriguing to answer, and one that I might be able to try and put together drops of. But your favorite noise then from the weekend?
So after much deliberation between ourselves, as apparently neither of us know our pre-66 GT cars, I really liked the low rumble that came from a Porsche 904/6 as it came out of the pits onto the circuit. At the time, we were stood on top of sort of the pit wall just as they exit, So they were beneath us, and sort of both sides where the cars are, the walls are quite high, which really amplified the noise. And we both sort of made this universal ooh face as it rumbled past us. We got so caught up in the sound, we kind of forgot to register what the car actually was. All we could really remember was that it was red. And so you thought it was a Marcos. I was saying, I think it's a Pizzarini. We were both wrong. And we sort of ended up having to sort of go back. You had a video. We ended up going back to the footage from the track and figuring out, actually, no, it was the Porsche.
Yes, yeah, Porsche 904. So typically they'd have a flat four engine in them, but for the slash six, they made about 60 of them that had the flat six out of the Porsche 911 in it. And yeah, it just has that sort of flat six yowl to it. And it came along probably sort of on the pit lane limiter in first gear, just absolutely sort of rah, coming past. So really phenomenal noise. And again, I think it's that thing of a good six cylinder engine can sometimes sound like a V12, which would have explained the Pizzarini confusion. But yeah, I don't know quite how I got Marcos from it. I think it was because it was the only other really low slung, very sort of lightweight red sports car that was in the field. And sort of, and I think it must have been a Marcos, but I was wrong. For me, though, favorite noise still has to be the V8s of the Mustangs. Having sat trackside and watched them for the Ken Miles Cup at Goodwood at the members' meeting, having sort of, I always enjoy a V8 rumble. But there's something about the fact that you can have like 14 Mustangs, all of them race prepared, all of them with a slightly different noise from pretty much the same engine, all of them, I think, 289 V8s. So yeah, it's always gets a slightly different noise. There's a slightly more sort of faster, higher pitched noise from Alex Brundle's Brustang, driven by Jimmy Broadbent and Jan Mardenborough this weekend. And then obviously sort of my sort of friend and sort of fellow classic racing enthusiast Fred Shepherd as well, and the always brilliantly paired Bill Shepherd Mustangs. That has a phenomenal note to it, as do pretty much all of their cars. They don't own anything that's not V8. So yeah, there's just a fantastic rumble of the Mustangs going past. And again, I'm thinking I must have a video somewhere on my phone that I can sort of drop in here. If I don't, you know what a racing V8 sounds like, certainly in a Mustang, and it is incredible. I think overall a fantastic weekend at the Silverstone Festival, certainly encouragement to get along to it if you're just a regular punter or if you enjoy racing. Obviously Masters continue racing throughout the year. They're supporting at the US Grand Prix and the Mexican Grand Prix this year, so if you're heading to any of those, get along early, enjoy the warm-up races for them. And they'll have the it'll be Racing Legends, it'll be the 66 through 85 Ford Cosworth DFV V8 F1 cars racing, and obviously they'll be out and about around the UK and for the rest of the season as well. There'll be all sorts of sports car races going on. I think the next UK based one will be Silverstone at the end of October, which is always a good laugh.
Yeah, I think with Masters as well, they will be Spa 6 hours later in the September, and then I think they are off to Italy, and then that will sort of be the season for them. Obviously as the nights draw in, things get a little bit colder,
a bit darker, so bring your raincoat and a torch maybe if you're getting back to your car in the car park,
especially if you go to Spa. I don't think you'd be stupid if you didn't pack a raincoat
for Spa whatever time of year.
Yeah, I mean, I love Silverstone Festival. It was one of my favorites last year. It's definitely has to be my favorite really this year. It's always just so much fun, and like you said, it brings sort of a really nice community feel to it. And it brings back. I mean, sometimes, obviously, because I'm not within where I want to be within sort of getting into media in that side of motorsport and things like that, sometimes you can, I guess I lose a little bit of sort of motivation and kind of think, this is never going to happen, what am I doing? And then, like, I'll go to something like Silverstone Festival, and it brings back sort of the passion and the motivation and sort of, I love this. I want this to be my sole job.
Mm. It's sort of, it's a great event to rekindle that love, both for the people there, the cars there, the action you sort of get to be a part of, and the whole encompassing thing just cements sort of what that drive is for. And I think it is a great event for that. It's a great one to sort of go, I really like this. And I remember when I started out doing photography, when I was sort of probably doing my undergraduate, thinking, I quite like this photography malarkey. And it sort of kindled a bit of something there. And going along to the event when I was younger with my dad and taking the car and camping, it is one of those events that just sort of worms its way into your heart with quite an earnest reason to do so as well. And I think it's well put together for that exact reason. And of course, we haven't even mentioned things like the Senna celebrations, the fact that we had the Tolmans, the biggest collection of his racing cars, and karting cars and Formula 3 and feeder series cars, and obviously road cars and bikes associated with them as well. So there was a phenomenal celebration for that. All the milestones for all the clubs, some fantastic cars racing in the other series. Lola's first prototype car racing in the, I think it would have been the Stirling Moss or Woodcut Trophy. There was some really, really nice cars scattered throughout the field. So again, if you're bored and want something to stick on in the background, go find any of the 3 days of recap. I'd probably argue that maybe the qualifying or the Sunday is the best, although cars slithering around in the wet with the spray everywhere on the Saturday was great. Though it was a bit tricky as they kept juggling the order to try and figure out what was coming on next to go and shoot it. But yeah, if you're interested in classic racing, give it a watch, get along to your next event. There's still plenty to enjoy sort of through the rest of the season. And if not, get looking at sort of what your nearby circuit has got. MSV seems to host a lot of them. Donington, Alton Park, Cadwell brands have all got events on throughout the year. Castle Coombe have got an autumn classic as well at the end of September. Really cheap to get along to, and some brilliant, brilliant racing, and some, again, really interesting cars. You often get some sort of Maserati 6GSs coming along to that, as well as sort of Heelys, Mustangs, Cobras. So worth showing up to that one as well if you want to get along to something.
That's the other thing, you know, we think of sort of, you know, if you're an F1 fan and you want to get to F1, they can be so expensive. And, you know, you can go to these events and get, what, Silverstone Festival had how many races this year?
I think it was supposed to, if they run the full schedule, it would have been somewhere close to 30, I think.
Yeah, and it's like you get, or even if you just go like for a day at like Brands Hatch or Donington, that'll have at least 5 or 6 races within a day. And it's so much more affordable. And it's, all the racing is great fun.
Yeah, so I'm looking at tickets to attend the Autumn Classic at Castle Coombs. I think that's the next sort of really big, easy to get along to thing. And an on-the-day ticket for an adult is £25. Book early enough in advance, and you can get it for as cheap as sort of £17.50. It's £35 for 2 days if you sort of just get it on the door. And that gives you on-site parking, entry. You'd sort of then walk around the entire time on foot. And you've got race list, GT and Sports Car Cup, Super Performance Ferrari, Mini 7 and Mini Melias, Acuri Jaguars, Fiskar 50s Intermark, which is a fantastic series, Allards and all sorts in that. HRDC Dunlop All-Stars and Classic Alpha Challenge. This is your Jaguar Mark 1s, Mark 2s, fantastic Alfa Romeo racing saloons. Jerry Marshall Trophy, this is touring cars from the 60s and 70s. You've got your Ford Capris in there. Jack Sears Trophy, which is, I think, saloon cars. 70s Road Sports, this is your Lotuses. You've got Morgans in there. HSCC Griffiths Hague Trophy, can't quite remember the lineup for that one, and then HSCC Formula 3. It is a huge event with classic car auction. You've got club displays and then historic car displays as well throughout the field, and that is for £25. You can't do better for a day's entertainment.
I should hopefully be there as well.
I will try and carve out some time in my calendar, 21st through 22nd September, but I figure I may be out of the country. I think I'm not here for, I've got a triathlon on, I won't be there for that one. But get along to it. It is good and worth attending. That is the overarching sentiment for classic racing. Do more of it. Go to it. Support it. Enjoy it.
Don't be a madman and do a triathlon. Go watch some classic racing.
Yeah. Bring a camping chair, get a hot chocolate and a beer, or a hot dog and a beer, and sit down at Castle Coombe and watch the racing instead. Far better way to spend your time. Unless you really like triathlons. Anyway, we'll be back in probably less than 24 hours with a preview for the Italian Grand Prix and, of course, covering all the news that's erupted since then, including the news about Logan Sargeant, which we've tried very hard to not mention, or certainly I have, because I've got some thoughts on that one. But that will all be coming out in our preview for the Italian Grand Prix, which will be 24 hours time on the same channel. Remember to like, comment, subscribe.
He just has now more time to race in classic car racing.
Yeah. I mean, he was out in the FW07 at Silverstone, Goodwood Festival of Speed.
They're eligible to race in Masters F1, so...
Yeah, why not? William said they'll support him in whatever he wants to do racing from here onwards. There's his in. It does also mean I need to get another signature on my Williams cap, so I've got to try and find Franco Colapinto at some point. But anyway, we'll be back with more F1-related nonsense in due course. Remember to like, comment, subscribe. In the meantime, Ellie Mae, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Instagram, where I have already got the first batch of Silverstone Festival photos out, and I will hopefully have some more throughout the week. We may have sort of a short period where I need to probably cover some London concourse stuff, but then it will go back to more Silverstone Festival action.
Should be very good indeed.
Where can the people find you?
You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok as at Jesse on Cars. You can also find me writing for Classic Car Weekly. I think by the time this comes out, you'll be able to pick up the new issue, which will have our live content from Silverstone Festival in it. It will also have a preview for Goodwood Revival in it. And I think it's also got more of my... It's got a fair amount of my photography in it, that issue. I can't remember why. It's got a big story from me about sustainable fuels as well. That's why. And then otherwise, just sort of remember to support print media. We've got plenty of interesting bits coming up, as well as our obviously Goodwood Revival coverage. It's a busy couple of weeks for me. Otherwise, we'll be back with a preview of the Italian Grand Prix, and then I'll follow that, a review of the Italian Grand Prix, by which point we'll know if Franco Colapinto is any good in an F1 car, and the results of this year's Formula 3 Championship. Stay tuned for more of that.